My name is Tim Ormsby, currently the state representative for the 3rd Legislative District, position number 2. Born and raised in Spokane, product of the streets of and the culture of Spokane. Found myself in a position to have the high honor of representing the good folks of the 3rd Legislative District for the last 15 years. And through that time, have gone from an apprenticeship through a journey level understanding of the process to being a foreman, and now find myself in a position of kind of being a superintendent, an overseer of the budget, the state budget. My responsibility as chair of the Appropriations Committee is to construct and negotiate a $46 billion state budget and trying to account for getting that passed and for accounting for the programs and services that the state delivers that our people count on.
I was just reading, you took office in 2003. Remind me, what were the circumstances of that?
So my predecessor resigned, had a young family. Jeff Gumboski was my predecessor.
Right.
And a young family being separated from them being in Olympia and them being in Spokane. It was a particularly long session in 2003, something that we've experienced recently. And just the hardship and getting back to what was important. Jeff resigned after the 2003 session. And there was an appointment process, and I was appointed by the Board of County Commissioners as his replacement at the end of September in 2003.
So as the chairman of the Appropriations Committee, is that your only assignment? I mean, that's a pretty big job that you've got to do.
That is my only committee assignment right now, because it does consume so much of the time that we're there. There are thousands and thousands of line items that need to be understood first and foremost, and then decisions need to be made on each and every one of those. And it's very time consuming, and a lot of it is organizing time and managing time. And as the chair, my primary responsibility is as a manager of the committee to make sure that we get our business done. Very businesslike in the approach of doing that, making certain that the public has input through a wide variety of mechanisms. But the actual committee hearings are when the public addresses the committee, and managing that and just keeping proper decorum and the management of the committee and making certain that everyone gets their say and also getting our business done.
So why did that job appeal to you?
I didn't find myself intuitively thinking that I wanted to pursue that. As I looked around, I was vice chair of the committee for 4 years. I understood the commitment that was going to be required in order to have that responsibility. Found myself being encouraged by my colleagues to pursue that as the person with the most experience in the intricacies of the state budget and the puts and takes of everything that it requires to put and that document together. Not reluctantly, but with a certain amount of realistic, this is going to be a real challenge. And, 12, 14, 16-hour days is often what it requires during the legislative session. And I found it fulfilling in the respect of being able to interact with members, understand their needs, both the Democrats and Republicans, the Senate members, the governor's office. It's a team effort, and I found myself being in a position of kind of a player coach in this team, being involved, but also making certain that other folks got fulfillment and satisfaction in their role.
So how does your district benefit from you being chairman of the Appropriations Committee?
The 3rd Legislative District is very diverse. What is not certain for folks that may just visit downtown, for example, and we have a very vibrant, very successful downtown, is that we, by 4 out of the 5 measurements of poverty, the 3rd Legislative District ranks right there in the, at the top of folks with income challenges. And my focus has been for individuals that for quality of life purposes, for removing obstacles to success, that we provide a leg up in terms of the state programs and services, whether it has to do with healthcare, education, early learning, higher education, providing, having people be in a position to realize and pursue their aspirations as a parent, as someone navigating the education system, as a trying to get into a profession, all of those things, trying to remove those obstacles and create quality of life for our residents here in the Third. And that can get translated into the state budget in a wide variety of ways. A lot of people, when they're paying attention to public policy, see what's happening on the local level. The city council meets weekly. It's covered in the media. We all are inundated at the national level via the 24-hour news cycle and tweets and other things that we're being bombarded with. It's been my experience that the things that really impact individuals' lives on the ground have to do with what the state does. And it gets far less coverage given our geographic distance, for example, and other things. So we're less aware of what's occurring in Olympia. And I think that's unfortunate because so much of what we do there impacts people's lives. And I'm keeping an eye out for the folks in the Third District, their quality of life and their ability to overcome life challenges in order to be successful.
So are there specific things you wanted to point to say that, you know, in 2019, if you're reelected, these are the things that I'm going to be working on for my district?
We're going to be continuing our work on education. Very proud of the fact that the legislature, after 6 years of dealing with the Supreme Court's McCleary decision on K-12, the Supreme Court said, you've done what we required you to do. There's more work to be done. Just because the Supreme Court has relinquished their jurisdiction does not mean that we don't have more to do. We have challenges in our mental health system, and those challenges are directly a result of the residential care, the institutional care, particularly at Western State Hospital, and federal lawsuits that we're going to have to conform to their findings. And we really need to transfer that system of mental health care from those kind of hospital facilities out into the communities in smaller settings with more direct contact with individuals. It takes time to transition from a hospital with several hundred patients to 16-bed facilities out in the community. And that's so we're balancing the our ability to construct and have folks in those and it's a double problem. We're finding that there's a lot more pressure for admissions for mental health care and not having beds available for folks. And we're on the other side of things, we're having a challenge discharging people to appropriate settings where they're going to get the care they need. And there are both state and federal regulators that are requiring us to make quality of care. We need a certain level of therapeutic care for those individuals, and they're keeping an eye on making sure we do that.
So do you think that becomes a public safety issue if you've got more of those community settings, especially in your district? Do you worry about that?
I think that mental health and public safety go hand in hand. These are secure facilities. I work across the street from one of the evaluation and treatment centers here locally. It is the evidence-based, science-based best way to deliver therapeutic care and to keep the public safe. I am not concerned that we have a public safety issue in our transition. And I think that both the state and federal regulators are directing us in that direction.
So your opponent points to a property crimes, I guess it is more of a property crime supervision unit for offenders being assigned to mentors and that sort of thing. Is something that was really high on the city of Spokane's list, got through the Senate. Your seatmate Andy Billig pushed for it in the Senate. It stalled in the House. What can you tell us about that bill? Did you have a role in that?
So I was a co-sponsor of that legislation. It is a good model. So it was specifically having to do with auto theft. So property crimes, not those charged with burglary or breaking and entering, that type of thing. It was specifically focused on individuals that had been convicted of auto theft. And the model is a good model, and it is about supervision of individuals once they're released. There were several questions that came up. The bill that passed, that my seatmate Senator Billig passed, was a pilot project that involved Federal Way and Spokane. And those and our areas, Federal Way and Spokane, have a big impact on auto theft and the associated problems with that. And this was a good model. What happened during the process, and this is typical of the legislature, is you identify problems. I was told when I first got there, if you think you've got a great idea, throw it out there and you'll find out exactly what's wrong with it. So through the machinations of this public process, there were questions that came up, constitutional questions about equal treatment. So does an individual convicted of a property crime in Ritzville or auto theft in Ritzville not have this sentence enhancement of supervision on top of that? So we need to apply these sentences universally. And what happened when that bill came over was it was pilot project in those two areas. And when it came to the House and those concerns were aired, the accommodation for that was to make it statewide. So everywhere would have the same equal treatment of offenders convicted of auto theft.
So you couldn't do a pilot project?
I think the legal scholars will debate. That's why we have courts. But in this case, this was the court of public opinion and this is the court of public policy. And when those questions were raised about equal treatment across the board, the policy committee, the public safety committee said, well, then let's make this policy universal. It happened at the 11th hour. There was no room in the budget to expand it. It wasn't going to pass as a pilot project. It needed to be statewide. And it was so late in the process that the budget had been buttoned up and we didn't have those extra resources in order to make it. What we are doing in the interim, and this is part of the job, is getting together with stakeholders in the interim involving the criminal justice system, law enforcement, the courts, the prosecutors, and local governments to say, can we get our act together on this just a little bit earlier and know the challenges that we're facing, go in with a plan, execute the plan, and then get the supervision model that is going to enhance public safety. It's unfortunate that it happened. I'm a supporter of this, so this wasn't the idea of, no, we're just not going to do it. The timing was unfortunate, and there simply wasn't enough time at the end of the session to get it done, but I'm working with the city and with prosecutors, law enforcement, in order to make certain that we have a buttoned-up, finished product that we can present and get passed.
Now, the governor has proposed a carbon tax and as a way of getting the state to essentially reduce its carbon footprint. Is that something that you support?
I think that we do need to address climate change. It's one thing that we do have to do in this business is have an affection for the facts, a passion, even a lust for accurate information. It just so happens that it's an inconvenient fact that carbon has a direct role in global warming and climate change. We have to acknowledge that. It's true. That's not in dispute. And we need to change our collective approach to commerce, to energy, et cetera. And one of the ways to do that is to put a price on carbon. It's a very complex proposal. The citizens will have an opportunity this year with Initiative 1631 to weigh in on their opinion about the problems of climate and the legacy that we're going to leave to future generations. I think that it's time that we have a serious conversation about that. I support the initiative, 1631. I understand that there are challenges with it, as there are with all public policy, but it's time that we made a direct action on one of the problems that, while we wish that it weren't true, we have to acknowledge that it is, and we should take action on it.
Okay. So we're 15 minutes in. Were there, and we'll probably get a chance to talk with you later on this fall, maybe a little more extended. Were there any issues that I didn't hit that are really important for you this time around?
One of the things that has been a big focus of mine is providing opportunities for folks that aren't going down a traditional path. A lot of young folks, through the direction of their families or of the social circumstances they find themselves in, have a laid out plan for themselves through, you know, getting through their K-12, then on to a four-year or two-year or four-year college, et cetera. Other individuals, and I would just say for myself, Doug, I'm still wondering what I'm going to do when I grow up at 59 years old. There are folks don't necessarily have that planned out, and they get out in the work world, have life experiences, and then realize they need to supplement their skills in order to do right by their family, which was in my case, had children at a young age and needed to provide for them, and opportunities that aren't intuitive. And one of my big focuses for the entire time I've been there, we've gotten a lot better at it, but we still need to do more, is to provide alternative paths to students that don't have that plan in place to get a bachelor's degree, for example, and then to have them have the marketable skills. And the community colleges are an excellent opportunity. The approved apprenticeship programs, and we really do need to make sure that these alternative methods have the rigor that in order to assure that they're actually getting in a bona fide learning situation and actually have the skills to get out there and take care of things, much like we accredit colleges and universities, we need to make sure that we have the same level of scrutiny and rigor over programs that aren't your typical higher education. This is higher education. It's just not what we traditionally think about.
So your trade is what?
I'm a cement mason, a concrete finisher.
So did you have an apprenticeship?
I did not have an apprenticeship. I struggled through. I wasn't enrolled as an apprentice because it's a very formal process. I did learn over the course of several years the trade in a lot of different aspects. Came in to my local union, the Operative Plasterers and Cement Masons International Association, Local 72, came in and looking for an opportunity there, and was given a field test about my skill level. And over the course of several years doing the job out in the field, I came in as a journeyman, but I didn't go through the formal apprenticeship process.
So if you'd gone back 40 years, would you have sought an apprenticeship?
I would have. It wasn't known to me, and part of what we need to be do a better job of is have those opportunities known to students. One of the things that that Spokane is doing particularly well in Spokane Public Schools and the surrounding schools, Meade, West Valley, East Valley, Central Valley, et cetera, all the surrounding schools are realizing that that's a real good opportunity for kids in school to have an exposure to it. The Spokane Public Schools has an annual event called Pizza Pop and Power Tools, where they bring in several hundred eighth grade girls and expose them to all of the trades, whether it's sheet metal working or iron working, welding, painting, carpentry, plumbing and pipe fitting, all of those things, to get an exposure to say this is a bona fide path. You don't have to get yourself in a situation where you're saddled with a lot of student debt. You're learning like you would in school, but it's not in a classroom. It's in the field. And you're not saddled with that crushing student debt at the end of it. You're actually earning while you're learning. It's a great model and one that I'm a big fan of. And just like anything, it's not for everyone. But it is a bona fide path, and folks can make good money, and they have that marketable skill that they can go to any place and be able to do that work.